Who can resist hauling out what remains of that old classics education to impress your friends when you speak of the Greek financial crisis? I know I haven't been able to, and I'm not the only one.
This is where civilization started. It's Greece. We're talking about the inventors of math, philosophy, lesbians, the inventors of thick, unswallowable yogurt, the inventors of something that looks like a pie yet is filled with spinach. The Greeks can make this work.
But the Greeks maybe know better about all this, and a lot has happened since the Acropolis became those touristy marble ruins on the hill in Athens. New Yorker writer Daniel Mendelsohn says the Greeks themselves find classical history to be more of an irrelevant burden. As much fun as it may be to say Thucydides, it's the much later stuff, Mendelsohn says, that sheds far more light on what's going on in Greece in 2015.
It's a sort of a cheap journalistic shot to constantly, you know, say, oh, well, you know, what's happening in Greece is like what's happened in ancient Greek history. The problem is certainly for the Greeks, who are tired of having to sort of live with the burden of the glories of classical Greece, is that they have a lot of history between ancient Greece and modern Greece, which no one ever talks about. You know, so you read, I was just reading the headlines about, you know, the Grexit and the Greek crisis, and it's like a tragedy from Euripides, says one paper. It's like a tragedy from Sophocles, says another paper. It's a bed of Procrustes, which is an allusion to a Greek myth. You know, so of course it's fun to show off, but it's not useful.
The classical period was a few hundred years at best, and this presumably irrelevant period that took place between the classical period and today is how many centuries?
Yeah, it's 22 centuries.
You're right, exactly. You know,
it's like, look, it's like if you were trying to write an article about something that's happening in the United States, and you said, oh, well, and all you could ever mention as a sort of reference was Benjamin Franklin. And you want to say, well, a lot happened since Benjamin Franklin, but nobody wants to talk about that. And that's how the sort of Greeks feel about constantly being beaten over the head with these classical references. And in fact, there are more useful references from other periods in Greek history, which of course are not as well known. So nobody ever, you know, refers to them.
And if you look at the Greek media, they're using those references much more readily than they are focusing on the classical stuff.
Yes, sure, because they know their own history, you know, and as I wrote, there's a bunch of my Greek friends online have been, you know, the writer that they are referencing right now is not Thucydides or Herodotus, which, of course, is what the all-American journalists keep referring to, but a poet, a 19th, early 20th century Greek poet called Kavafi, who actually wrote a lot of his poems about later Greek history and these sort of ironic, sardonic poems about failures in Greek history. So, you know, the Greeks know their own history, and that's what they're talking about. But all we want to keep talking about is Pericles and Plato and Thucydides.
What is the tone of these other references, and how do they illuminate what's going on in the souls of Greek citizens right now?
You know, when you invoke the glories of classical Athens, it's a kind of a high picture of what Greece was. But there's a lot of complicated history, you know, since then. And what Kavafi's poems always, you know, emphasize, no matter what period he's setting his poems in, is the sort of how politicians can be deluded by false hopes, you know, how people get things wrong, how whatever the general's plan was somehow gets screwed up on the day of the battle. You know, those are the things that he's interested in. And of course, right now in Greece, given the really devastating nature of what's happening to the Greek people and the Greek economy, that makes much more sense for them as a reference, you know, than to say, oh, the glories of Periclean Athens or the you know, whatever happened in 431 BC, as opposed to things that happened much more recently in Greek history. So I think the tone is sort of world weary, slightly resigned, but also, you know, there are a lot of this poet's poems about brave Greeks who know that things are at their worst possible state, but they still keep their heads up. So that's another kind of aspect.
I love this reference to the ability or the capacity to say no in the poem that you write about, and how it speaks almost directly to just what happened yesterday.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a famous poem by Cavafy in which he talks about how one day you're going to have to decide to say either yes or no. And of course, a lot of people were quoting that poem right during the referendum, you know, and the Greeks like to cite that poem. But, you know, here again is a great example of when some knowledge of more recent Greek history would help commentators, because the word no has a very powerful force in modern Greek history. You know, the Greeks asserted themselves at the beginning of World War II in a very famous instance by declaring no in the face of what was going on. And so, you know, if you know a little more about what's happening in modern Greek history, some of these things, like the recent no vote, was not just a no vote, but it was, you know, an invocation of a previous stance that they took very bravely. So, you know, that's why it's useful to know a little bit more.
And it certainly deepens one's understanding of the emotional connection to what's going on now to relate that no to fascism with a very different kind of financial no to a Germany of the 21st century.
Right. But of course, you know, when in 1940 they said no to fascism, they connected in their own recent cultural history to saying no to the Germans in 2015, who they feel are trying to impose, another kind of sort of tyranny. You know, so these things have a kind of continuity in their own cultural mind. And that's why it's kind of interesting to know that history instead of always to be talking about Plato.
And the Acropolis is in ruins on the hill, but this history is very much alive.
Yes. And, you know, there's a wonderful anecdote from the beginning of modern Greek history, which is after, in the early 1800s, when Greece became an independent nation again, after 400 years of being a subject state to the Ottomans, they, talking of the Acropolis, there was a great movement to clean up the Acropolis now that it was back in the hands of the Greeks. And in the mid-19th century, there was a lot of restoration done. And what that meant at the time was clearing away everything since the ruins of classical Athens. And there had been a lot. There had been Roman ruins. There had been ruins from the Byzantine period. There had been ruins from the Ottoman period when there were mosques being built on the Acropolis. All of that stuff was being cleared away as if replicating the same mistake that the journalists are now making, which is the only thing that is quote unquote Greek history is classical Greek history, and everything that came since we don't want to look at. And that was an actual physical thing that happened. They just cleared away everything that was post-classical.
Daniel Mendelsohn, thanks so much.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Daniel Mendelsohn is a writer for The New Yorker.